wish you preached today and you could have water? We're in the study about no other gods. And in parts 1 and 2, beginning of that, we, as we discussed in the first lesson, we recognized that, number 1, man was made to worship. Number 2, man's desires the qualities of Jehovah. And number 3, man will worship something or someone to secure the qualities in lieu of Jehovah. That's called idolatry. We're to have no other gods before us, but no idols before us. And as the verses that Brother Dodds had read about, it doesn't end well for Pharaoh and his man and his chariots, as they will be swamped literally in the Red Sea. And this did happen, by the way. These are things that you could archaeologically go to and find remnants of. You know, there was there's this theory that supposedly they crossed in only 2 feet of water. That was one of the explanations they tried to give. Although it says in the Bible they crossed in dry land. And if you go to that spot, there's actually a ridge that goes from 1 mile deep up to 300 foot deep, like a natural bridge, where they found horse skeletons and chariot wheels in the middle of that thing. It's actually in the Persian Gulf. There was a man one time who bought into that, and he was trying to tell one of his third graders that this didn't really happen, that they crossed in only 2 feet of water. And the kid was upset. He's like, wow, you know, I always believed that this was more than that. And so he was really downtrodden in his heart. And then the young boy started getting very excited, started praising God, saying, oh my, oh my. And the Bible class teacher tried to say, what are you so excited about? He said, God is more awesome than I thought. He drowned all those horses and all those chariots and the Pharaoh in only 2 feet of water. But, of course, it takes a child to figure some of these things out at times. But, you know, the first 6 plagues were all attacks on the God system of Egypt that Israel had grown to love. We in the Bible reading world look at these events in Exodus chapters 7 through 11 as a collection of incredible events. But more than that, it is God warring with the gods of Egypt. You see, Israel had fallen in love over 4 centuries with these false gods. When they went into Egypt, they were just learning to know Jehovah. But when they came out, he was an alien to them. In Joshua 24, verse 14, Joshua says, put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt and serve the Lord. This is after 40 years of trying to be re-desensitized back to God. And so the point is, in Exodus 12, 12 and Numbers 33, 4, God says, against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am the Lord, or Jehovah. And in 33, verse 4, the Lord had executed judgments on their gods. We're looking at a war. God is serious about having no other gods before him. And plague 1 was Nile to blood, 7, verse 20. Plague 2 was frogs. That was the god Hecht. First one was Hapi, the Nile god. That was the number 2 god in all the land. The plague of lice was number 3. Plague 4 was the insects. Kehepera. Number 5 was livestock disease. That was the Apis, the bull god. And in number 6, boils, which was Set, the god of health. God took them all down like an old western. But now, with that in mind, we will cover the final 4 gods, beginning with plague number 7, the plague of hail. In Exodus 9, verse 23 through 26, for those of you Bible-toting Christians, you may open up your scriptures to that passage. It says, Moses stretched out his staff toward the sky, and the Lord sent thunder, hail, and fire down to the earth. And the Lord rained hail on the land of Egypt. So there was hail and fire flashing, that's lightning, continually in the midst of the hail, very severe, such had not been in the land of Egypt since it became a nation. The hail struck all that was in the field through the land of Egypt, both man and beast. The The hail struck also every plant of the field and shattered every tree of the field. Only in the land of Goshen, where the sons of Israel, there was no hail. Now Pharaoh continually denied the one true and living God. God said, let my people leave this place. Pharaoh said, no. Now this time, when Moses and Aaron unleashed this, it's going to be with the idea that Pharaoh will begin to believe that there is someone more than these Egyptian gods in control. The Lord wanted Pharaoh to know that you're only in rule because I let you rule. Exodus 9:13-35. And so it's of interest to note at this time that there are some patterns of these plagues that you might need to observe. Pattern 1, plagues 1, 3, and 4, every third plague, were announced to Pharaoh in the morning. And plagues 2, 5, and 8 were announced to Pharaoh by the day. And plagues 3, 6, and 9 were unannounced to Pharaoh at all. And number 10 had its own impact. Another pattern that's interesting to know is plagues 1 and 2, those judgments were water-orientated. 3 and 4 were earth-orientated. 5 and 6 were health-orientated. 7 and 8 were plant-orientated. And 9 and 10 were heaven-orientated. But the pattern I want you to see this morning is number 3. The first three plagues were an equal opportunity plague. It happened to everybody, Jew and Egyptian. 4 through 6 was just for the Egyptians. They got bonus plagues. And then 7 through 9 were for just the ignorant Egyptians, the ones who could have opted out, but they didn't. They got whacked. And then plague number 10 was just for the defiantly ignorant, either Jew or Egyptian. You know, you could opt out of that with the pasah, the blood on the doorpost. Now, this third pattern that we see, God gave the Egyptians a way to escape that if they were willing to listen and take refuge, you could avoid some damage. Exodus 9, verse 19 says, now therefore send, bring your livestock and whatever you have in the field to safety. Every man and beast that is found in the field is not brought home. When the hail comes down on them, they will die. Now patience is one of the greatest attributes of our great and mighty God. And yet Pharaoh still did not understand this, and he was willing to try the patience of Jehovah. Let me make a recommendation. Do not try Jehovah. You cannot win. You only win by not trying him. And with a wave of the staff, hail from the sky began to fall. This is a bad storm, never before seen in Egypt. In a land that doesn't receive much rain, many storms, this was a bad one. This would have been a terrifying storm, being accompanied by large amounts of rain, thundering, and lightning. Well, I want to tell you about Nut, the sky goddess. The Egyptians worshipped this sky goddess. It was a biggie. She was a big goddess to them. She was sometimes represented as a woman without clothes, stretched across the sky. Her fingertips would touch the east part of the sky, and she'd stretch over the sky. She had stars on her belly, and her feet would touch the other side of the horizon. And sometimes she was represented as a cow standing tall in the sky above them. Now, she was considered the mother of all gods. According to the Egyptians, during the day, the heavenly bodies, the sun and the moon, they would actually be swallowed by her, and that she would give birth to them when they rise up in the east again. They believe the sun actually passed through her body, and she gave birth to the sun in the night, which would give you a new day. And so in later myth, Nut becomes the daughter of Shu, the god of air, and Tefnut, the goddess of moistness. And she was paired with Geb, the earth god. And she had five children, Osiris, Isis, Set, Nephthys, and Horus, the elder. So this is a pretty well-connected god. You would have to been clinically brain dead not to know the god Nut, the sky god, during that time. Now, the Egyptians believed that she lived in trees. And the plague that was destroyed, many of the trees of Egypt, they were wiped out. And the plague of hail demonstrated that Nut had no power over the one true God. God controls all the elements. He created them. Psalm 78 verse 47 says that he destroyed their vines with hailstones and their sycamore trees with frost. He says in Psalm 105:33, he struck down their vines and their fig trees and shattered the trees of their territory. Newt's home was destroyed. God became a home wrecker for Newt on that day. She had no place to live. Now the Egyptians literally and figuratively looked up to Newt as their source of protection from anything that judgment that come from the sky. It is Jehovah that is the protector of man, not Newt. It is God who causes the rain to fall, not Newt. Okay, it sounds like a political speech. Not Newt, not Newt. Jehovah, he's greater than Newt. That's the message. Matthew 5, verse 45, he's the one that causes the rain to fall and the sun to rise and to set. 19, verse 11 of Psalm tells us that heavens are telling the glory of God and the expanse is declaring the work of his hands. Not Newt, it's God, Jehovah. It was in the beginning that he created the heavens and the earth, 1 verse 1 of Genesis. 34 verse 4 of Isaiah tells us all the hosts of heaven will wear away and the sky will be rolled up like a scroll, but their host will wither away as a leaf withers on the vine or one withers on the fig tree. It's God who's in control. God, Jehovah, he's Lord, not Newt. Now, what's interesting to note, these plagues, by the way, if you follow the story, they would have been the natural order they would have called out to. If one of the gods were taken down, the next one would come. Now, the hail busted everything up. Remember that. Okay, growing up in Iowa, farmers dreaded the hail storm because it could wipe out the majority of a crop. Well, now comes plague number 8. Now, they can't cry out to Newt. Oh, Newt, help us, because Newt turned on them. God put Newt's head into the carpet. And so now it's time for the plague of locusts, because they're going to be calling out for another god from their hungry guts. Plague of locusts in Exodus 10, verses 4 through 6. For if you refuse to let my people go, tomorrow I will bring locusts into your territory. And they shall cover the surface of the earth so that no one shall be able to see the land. That's some serious locust. They shall eat the rest of what has escaped. What is left to you from hail, they shall eat every tree which sprouts for you out of the field. And then your houses will be filled, and the servants and the houses of all the Egyptians, something neither your fathers nor your grandfathers have seen. From the day they came upon the earth until this day, and Moses turned and went from Pharaoh. Moses and Aaron go and warn him, let the people go. He didn't do that. So what do they win, Johnny? As the bonus prize, you get locust. Okay? According to the text, it'll be the worst locust invasion since Egypt had come into existence. And Pharaoh's servants, they beg the Israelites to leave. They're leaning toward the one true God. They're saying, listen, Pharaoh, I've had enough of this. Please, please let them go. But it wouldn't work that way. Pharaoh had a hard heart. He kept hardening it. Finally, God will end up doing the job for him. And see, Pharaoh refuses. Moses stretches out his hand with a rod, and a strong east wind begins to blow for nearly a full day and night. The next morning, the locusts arrive in devastating fashion. Now, locusts can only fly for a short time unless if they have a strong wind. Then they can go 15 miles per hour. It's been clocked. These locusts must have come from a long distance because it was 24 hours in flight, because that's how long the wind blew. And this alone demonstrated to the Egyptians, with this strong wind over 24 hours, when these locusts come, God's not just the God in Egypt, he's the God over the earth. Jehovah's running the show. And these locusts eat everything that survived from the devastating hail. They ate every green plant, the fruit off the other plants. They even ate the bark off the trees. Now, that's some hungry locust. And so when we look at these locusts just eating everything, they didn't go into the land of Goshen where the Israelites were. Well, I'm going to tell you about another god that the Egyptians would have been crying out to after the hail, and that's the god of Napri. That's the grain god. You see, there was such a devastating hailstorm that naturally, it wasn't going to be a bumper crop. They were pretty hungry. So naturally, you're going to cry out to the great grain god, Napri. This god was an androgynous deification of grain, which was a very valuable commodity in Egypt, particularly now. They felt without proper worship and reverence for this god, there would be great starvation. Now, he's often referred to as the god of corn, but he's also associated with barley and wheat. And his name simply means Lord of the Mouth, because he brought food from the ground to your mouth. And they're hungry now. And they remember, these plagues take place over a period of about 9 months. Harvest is getting slim. And now they're crying out to Napri. Oh, Nut couldn't protect us. Come on, Napri, bring us food. We need your help. Well, you know what? This god's not going to be able to come to help. We should have a picture of this god there. There we go. He was often pictured with having his little grain. He was the deliverer of that grain, sometimes called Napra or Naper. And he's pictured as a human. His body's dotted to represent grain of corns. In the hieroglyphics, they write his name similarly to symbols of grain. They would have symbol of grain written on that. Now, naturally, they're crying out to Napri. Here are some of the songs they used to sing to Napri. The hymn of Hapi, which is the hymn of the Nile, one of the lines says, I was the grain maker, beloved of Napri. Hapi honored me on every field. None hungered in my years, none thirsted in them. You know, they'd be praising Napri as the bringer of that grain to them. Another hymn says, Napri gives all herbs, fields bounty, bring it to satiety, and gives it to all lands. Everybody jubilates. Hearts are glad. Breasts rejoice. Everyone exalts. Woohoo! At Napri, he's awesome, they're saying. So they're going to try to butter up Napri to bring them some food. And God loads the shotgun again, and he's about to take old Yeller out one more time. And Napri appears worthless now, because Pharaoh calls Moses and Aaron and says, get this off of us. Get these locusts away. See, while they're crying out to Napri, when God sends those locusts, they're like, there's nothing left. They just killed everything. Go to Joel chapter 1 sometime and read about the devastation of locusts. You'll see it's a very serious thing. Napri, it's not Napri that causes the plants to grow and bear fruit. That's Jehovah. God's saying, look at me. That's not Napri. He's the one that made the ground and the plants and the sun and the water. So therefore, he is in control, not Napri. Jehovah's greater than Napri. We know, according to Genesis 1 verse 11, he's the one that said, let the ground, earth sprout vegetation and plant yielding seeds and fruit bearing trees. And it was Jehovah, or Elohim in that case, who brought forth the creation. Hosea 2 verse 9, God says, therefore I will take back my grain at harvest time and my new wine in the season. It's God who's in control. Psalm 78 verse 46, and he also, their crops he gave to the grasshopper and the product of their labor to eat to the locust. He took their god out. Napri is done. Now they're going to call in some heavy hitters. Let's talk about another god. Plague 9, the darkness. In Exodus 10, verse 22 and 23, so Moses stretched out his hand toward the sky. And there was thick darkness in all the land for 3 days. They did not see one another, nor did anyone rise from his place for 3 days. But the sons of Israel had light in their dwellings. Now God told Moses to stretch his hand out, and this would bring a great darkness around the land. This darkness was so severe that it could be felt. Now that one's puzzled people before. The word felt means to grope. And it can mean one of two things that this probably means. One, it can mean the darkness was so intense that if you've ever had power go out and you're feeling around the house, you know how it is. We've had the power go out before in our house in Osceola when we used to live there, and I was downstairs when it happened, and consequently, there was a dug head-shaped dent in the vent system where it came out from the furnace. And you groped in our basement when the power went out. It was one of those old coal basements. And for 3 days, there was thick darkness over the land. Or the other, and to me the more probable explanation of the groping or the feeling of the darkness, is a very, very bad sandstorm. You know, the Khamsin is the winds of the desert, and they're not unusual at all. In fact, if you've ever been down to Lubbock, they used to have some bad dust storms. The Great Dust Bowl, we had some of those that were terrible in the Depression. You could read about that. But in Egypt, they have storms that are even far worse. And in this case, they can come up suddenly and even last for 3 days. Well, however, the Khamsin do not cover the entire country, but they do block out the light. And with this wind blowing, which I think it is, but if it isn't, that's okay. Either which way, I know that it was dark for 3 days. But usually when these wind storms came up and these dark dust storms came up, you could not leave your place. You could not leave at all. You couldn't breathe. You boarded up everything. You could not come out. And this, if that was the case, was probably one of the most terrible storms you can imagine. Whatever the cause of the blackness, Pharaoh knew that he's dealing with the true God. Because this could have been quite terrifying not to see the sun for 3 days. The Egyptians are now approaching the end of their rope when it comes to these plagues. I want to tell you about one of the biggest gods they had in Egypt. He was called Ra, the sun god. That's where we get the word ray from, sun ray. And he was often looked upon as the number three god in all Egypt. And some archaeologists actually put him at number two. And even one, a famous archaeologist, Wallace Budge, said about 100 years ago that Ra was the first god in what he believes was a monotheistic system in Egypt at the beginning. And then in that case, Ra would be number one. But for the most part, Ra is viewed as number three. Out of 80 gods, that's a pretty big one. And whatever the perspective, though, he is a big god to them. In fact, they referred to Ra as Egyptians. They called themselves the cattle of Ra. That says quite a bit. In the artwork, Ra is primarily depicted as a man having a sun disk above his head, and sometimes the head of a hawk symbolizes the sky because he's in the sky. Sometimes he'd even be wearing the headdress of Pharaoh. The idea was to show that Pharaoh was linked to him. And the Egyptians believe Ra made the journey across the sky every single day. And later myths about Ra is portrayed differently at each position of the sun of the day, that he was reborn every day by the god Nut. And then he would start out as a child, and as he'd go at noon, he'd be the hawk-headed. By night, as the sun's going down, he would be the Atum, the elder. And so they really were tied to this sun god. By the way, many of these religions worship the sun. For the Egyptians, the sun represented light and warmth and growth. This made Ra very important to the Egyptians, and it's no coincidence that the sun ended up being ruler for all, for them. In the myths, the sun in the sky was either seen as the eye of Ra or the head of the god. And so, they were very much attached to Ra. All these other gods are dropping like flies before the Egyptians, and it would have been a natural instinct to want to make the appeal to really what they would consider the largest god, second only to Pharaoh, who they believe Pharaoh was the human form of Ra. So they're crying out to this Ra god. And there's intercede for us. You know, you're the great God. You've seen all this. It'd be a natural tendency for them to reach out to this God by now. Pull out all stops, and almost in like fashion, God loads up the shotgun again. It's time to take Ra out. You're going to call out to Ra? You're going to worship the sun god? I will block him out for 3 days. They would be terrified. Pharaoh tried to get Moses to depart Egypt, but to leave his animals behind in Egypt. Moses could not do this because they needed animals to sacrifice. Next Sunday evening, I'm going to cover, you know, from this story, a way to fight these false gods in our life. And then we'll continue on with Baalism. But Moses couldn't leave like that. And so he became angry at Moses and he said, "Get out of here. I never want to see you again. I don't want to see your face." Well, that only goes to show you that Jehovah is greater than Ra. Deuteronomy 4, verse 19 and 20, we see that it's the sun and the moon and the stars that God's in control of. It's the Lord Jehovah, not Ra, a sun god. Psalm 113, verse 3 and 4, from the rising of the sun to its setting, the name of the Lord is to be praised because he's the maker of that. The Lord is high above the nations. His glory is high above the heavens. Malachi 1:11 says, from the rising sun even to its setting, my name will be great among the nations. Then again in Jeremiah 31, verse 35, we know it's the Lord who gives the sun for light by day and the fixed order of the moon. It's God, Jehovah, is in control, not Ra. And so now we've seen nine of their top gods taken down like a rodeo. And now we're going to cover the last one, death of the firstborn. In Exodus 4, 11 verses 4 through 6, we find out that about midnight, God's going to kill all firstborn. And even Pharaoh's family, it doesn't matter how poor you are or how rich you are, if you have a firstborn, God is going to kill that firstborn with a pestilence. And there will be great cry in all the land of Egypt, as there has never been one like that before. God had been patient with Moses. He'd given him nine chances to change his mind, but Pharaoh refused to give in. Now you're going to be wiped out. The only way you could avoid it is to put the blood of the Passover on your door and to participate in the Passover. If you did that, you could avoid it. And at midnight, when all the firstborn of Egypt who weren't protected died, there was great sorrow through the land. There will be death for all firstborn, from the poorest to the most elite. And this one was a bad one. You see, Pharaoh was viewed as the number one god. It didn't get any higher than Pharaoh. And this plague was of death was God's final way to show that he's more powerful than all gods. Because they used to have a lion, you know, little lion statues called Aker. They'd place them by the doors, the guardians, to keep anything, an alien spirit from coming in. The Sphinx that you see in front of the pyramid over here and a lot of those pyramids, those were those Akers. They're guardians of the tomb to keep any other gods out or spirits from messing things up. And people always had them by their doorpost in Egypt. Well, God said, listen, if you want protection, you better put some blood on that doorpost, not Aker. Find out later that's Christ's blood, the Passah. He goes over us in the judgment. Well, Pharaoh was thought to be the physical representation of Ra, one of the greatest gods. And the firstborn son was to take the place of Ra's representative for the Egyptians. With Pharaoh's son dead, the world of the Egyptians was crushed. The people would be ready to surrender. Pharaoh's standing in the eyes of the Egyptians would have undertaken a severe blow. You have to remember, Pharaoh's slaves have already been convinced that the Lord is God, Jehovah. Now they are ready to beg for him to leave. And there was a goddess called the Maat. It was the goddess of the physical and moral law of Egypt. She was pictured as sitting or standing with the scepter in her hand and an ostrich feather in the other in her hair. And the Egyptians believed that if Pharaoh ever failed to live and maintain the Maat, the proper balance of judgment according to the moral laws, then chaos would ensue and the nation would come to an end. And it would seem that that's what the Egyptians were believing at this point. In 1233, the Egyptians are trying to say to Israel, get out, get away from here, quote, lest we all be dead men. They literally were thinking this was the end. Chaos. And the crops were gone. Egypt was in chaos. The animals mostly dead. Their firstborn now dead. It's very likely the people blame Pharaoh for not listening to Moses, spokesman of the one true God. Probably didn't recognize God as God. They may have thought that he was connected to the mount. And so in Exodus 14:4, God said he would kill Pharaoh and his army to prove to the Egyptians that he was the Lord. It's Jehovah that's God, not Pharaoh. Exodus 12:29-30 was read. Exodus 14:27-28, that was also read. God wiped him out. He wiped out the firstborn. He wiped out Pharaoh. He wiped out the number one God. Did it work, we might ask? Well, a new song was sung in Exodus chapter 15. Boy, it was a number one hit in Israel. Stayed on the number one charts for about a century. Exodus 15, verse 11 says this: Who is like thee among the gods, O Lord, O Jehovah? Who is like thee, majestic in holiness, awesome in praises, working wonders? For a split second, these people sang a song that recognized God as Jehovah. Now, within 50 days, they're going to be making an Apis bull god. They haven't beaten their old habits yet. They'd have to spend 40 years being re-educated in the desert. But at least for the moment, they had begun to put those false gods behind them. Jehovah was seen as a viable and supreme God. And so, I want to leave you with this thought tonight. Now, tonight, I was going to start the Baalism, but Masa, the wife of Francis, is here, and we're having a nice little get-together after the evening service. So tonight's lesson is going to be a welcome for her. I think you'll appreciate it. I know she will. And then, but next week we're going to cover Baalism, see that sector of gods. But what I want you to see this morning, how you can apply this to your life, is very simple. These habits are hard to break. Before we came to Christ, we did things that we shouldn't do as Christians. And you might be struggling with some of those right now. God wasn't willing to give up on the Egyptians. He gave them time. They didn't come around. He wasn't willing to give up on the Israelites. And eventually they began to come around. You may struggle with these things the rest of your life. That's for sure. But God will not give up on you if you don't give up on Him. And so I invite you this morning to renew your faith in Jesus Christ. If you are struggling, if you have some gods before you that you need not have, if you have not put your full focus on God of the universe, Jehovah, you need to this morning. And if you've never entered the covenant of protection, the covenant we enter into God, and you know you enter into it at baptism, you need to be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins. Do you want a relationship with God? You need to die to yourself and live to Christ. Or if you're looking for a church home and you think that this might be the one that you'd like to have, you need to let us know. You need to let us know. We treat our visitors fine, but we'd like you to be more than a visitor. Why don't you think about those things while we stand and sing?